Where I make wine, I like to push the limits of where grapes ripen.
People just need to trust their own palate and not be concerned about what a critic says or what they read in the paper.
As a master sommelier, I mean, for me, at this point in my life, I'm kind of more in the Yoda stage.
My dad used to say when I was a little kid that the best wine you'll ever have is one you want to have another glass of.
I had a moment when I realized the power of wine. One day at a dinner, a bottle of Mouton Rothschild 1955 was opened and it just like silenced the whole table.
I'm so happy when a friend of mine sells a bottle of wine. And I love to brag about the wines that are being made by our friends because I'm so proud of them.
Farming is agricultural warfare.
I can't imagine doing anything else.
We say, so drink the wine. That's kind of our motto here at Life Between the Vines. One of the cool things about wine, besides drinking it, is the people you drink it with. And the stories you hear and tell with wine all come together to make every bottle unique. Discovering and tasting wine shouldn't be a homework assignment. And we believe that the people who are closest to wine have the best stories. So open a bottle.
And welcome to podcast number 178. This week we feature Susan Doyle, general manager and winemaker for Spring Mountain Vineyard. Diversity is one of the most interesting aspects of the wine business in Napa Valley. You'll find many men and women winemakers, as well as winemakers from all over the world. French, Danish, Swiss, Italian, and Australian, just to name a few. For this program, we spoke with Australian-born Susan Doyle, general manager and winemaker for Spring Mountain Vineyard. Susan grew up on a ranch, so it seemed natural for her to make her way into the wine business. We caught up with Susan at the vineyard during Premier Napa Valley Week in mid-February. So we're here with Susan Doyle, and Susan is the general manager as well as winemaker at Spring Mountain Vineyards.
Good morning.
How are you?
Welcome. Great. Thank you on this beautiful Sunday morning.
Thank you for having us up here. It really is. It's tremendous, some sunshine. So thank you for letting me have a sunny day here.
Our pleasure. We're over the rain too.
It's nice. A lot of things I'd like to talk about today, but the first thing I want to talk about, briefly, we had a little bit of a chat over at the Oddfellows Hall during the tasting for Spring Mountain, and I learned you are from Australia.
Yes, yes, long way from home.
A long way from home. Is that hard for you to do that?
No, I'm lucky I go home once a year, normally at this time of the year, and it's just before harvest in Australia, so I get to sip and taste my way around both the vineyard and all the different wineries, so it's perfect timing. My family come up and see me regularly, so good excuse to get on a plane and work on the town when I get down under.
Do you actually get involved when you're down there?
Yeah, I do, actually. Family still have a property in South Australia called Turkey Flat Wines. And so if I'm back there to see them, then yeah, I'm out there running around the fields tasting and tasting tanks and making the comparison between Australia and what's happening up here and trying to learn new techniques and pilfer whatever we can to bring back. And
ideas, maybe?
Ideas, yes, both for the vineyard and wineries.
So obviously, you grew up in a winemaking family then, I'm guessing.
I did not traditionally. I grew up on what we would call a ranch. So we had apples and cattle. So for me, I actually studied environmental science and then went on to study winemaking in New Zealand. So I have a little mix of an accent between Australia, America, and New Zealand. So I confuse everyone.
Well, I'm sure, again, like we were saying before, eventually the American accent seeps in no matter what.
Well, yes, my mother did accuse me of being an American the other day. So I thought that since I am actually now an American and a dual citizen, then it was perfect. But no, I grew up from the age of four running around eating apples. And when I first came to America and worked over in Sonoma, I often made a lot of my picking decisions based on what I was seeing in the apple orchards. And then as I've moved around, I've utilized that to understand the environment and realize when we need to pick by watching all the other trees and the leaves turning. So it's all rather symbiotic for me.
Coming over to America, was that a winemaking decision? Was that a family decision?
No, it was a winemaking decision. I was actually approached to head up a winery called McMurray Ranch in Sonoma. And so came across and did that for 7 years and loved it and stayed and then moved across here to the Napa Valley and been here ever since. So 14 years later and I'm still here and won't go home.
When you started at McMurray, was your position winemaker, assistant winemaker? What were you doing?
It was winemaker.
Oh, wow.
So started out as winemaker and then moved across to Diageo Chateau and Estate Wines as their director of winemaking for all of their North America company. And I was also heading up their New Zealand brand and their Italian brand as well. So then decided I wanted to go back to small, which is pretty much what I'd started out with in Australia, which was just a small 5,000 case brand. And so the opportunity at Spring Mountain presented itself as technical director for vineyards and winemaking. So I moved across, came across, never looked back, loved it. So getting my hands dirty again, walking the vines with a vineyard manager and getting to actually make wine and get my hands dirty. And now as general manager, back out on the road, helping to sell it too. So doing a little of everything.
But I imagine, is that some of your favorite time is to be out and walking through the vineyards?
It is. I mean, I love harvest time. It starts normally for us around about August, and we finish up probably around late November, depending on the time of and the seasons. But it's a beautiful time of the year, so very peaceful. You get up 5 in the morning, you're out there with everybody picking, and the team are hustling and singing, and it's just wonderful, very peaceful.
So really the coyotes, the bears, the snakes don't really give you any trouble when you're out there, right?
No, really. You know, it's so funny because my vineyard manager over in Sonoma once told me that if I ran into a bear, I had to throw my arms in the air. And if I ran into a cougar, then I had to roll and play dead. And then I thought, well, isn't it supposed to be the other way? And he said, oh, yes. I said, well, you try to kill me? He said, that's all right. You know, to stay out of the vineyard, I only have the shotgun for the boar, and I'm thinking, great. And then I'm down on my hands and knees looking at this cute little rattlesnake.
Oh, no.
And he said, get up. You know, those things are more poisonous than anything you've got in Australia. And I should have known better. But yeah, no. You know, critters aside, it's very safe.
Yeah, I don't want to scare anybody. This is just simply nature. But yeah, I've heard about the baby rattlers. That's kind of a crazy story, those little guys.
Yeah, they're sweet.
Yeah, right. Actually, you brought up the boars, and I'm a little curious about that because I've talked about this with a number of wineries. They've become a bit of a problem in some vineyards. And do you have any problems around here with boars?
We're lucky here, but they do. They come in and they obviously love to chew on all of our irrigation lines.
Oh, nice.
They're chasing the water. So we spend a lot of time repairing every year where they've chewed. And then, of course, they come in and they dig up all the ground. So you spend most of your time repairing the areas that they can destroy. For us being on the mountainside, it's not so bad. We have 800 acres and we have large tracks for them that they tend to stay away from the main vineyard. Plus, they don't like so much of the noise and they don't like the smell of the soap on the rest of us mere humans, so they tend to stay away.
Have you run into any bad situations with a boar ever when you've been in the vineyard?
I've been lucky. I've had a mother with little piglets, and basically I got out of her way. She was much bigger, and there was no way I was taking that on. Yeah. So took a wild move around. But, you know, compared to the little wombats that we have in Australia that you find in the vineyard and snakes, you just learn to keep an eye out for them and move away.
Sure. You almost grow a little bit of an intuition, I would imagine, because your senses are heightened.
I think so. Growing up on a farm, you knew when there was trouble and you stayed away from it. It was just much easier to walk the other direction.
Yeah. What I'm leading up to, you know, what I like our listeners to understand is that, you know, winemaking is certainly not for the faint at heart because of the time you put into it, the issues that certainly risk your life, part of it being, I wouldn't call it like factory work, but in a way you're dealing with machinery and machinery that can be very dangerous if you're not aware of what you're doing.
Very true. I mean, I've heard some horrible stories, and we often, you know, I've got long hair, so my hair's normally pulled back and under a cap, and then you're in tanks and you're digging out tanks. So I've spent my days climbing in through very small holes to get into a tank and shovel out the skin. So I've got the good workout. But it's very easy to be overcome by the carbon dioxide and lose your life. So we have strict rules that we follow just to make sure that it's safe so that you can come back out and enjoy that glass of wine at the end of the day with the rest of your team.
And you certainly get a different appreciation for the wine because of what you put into it.
You do. It's, you know, a lot of people think that you just grow the grapes, pick them, throw it in a tank and stomp on the grapes and hey presto, you've got wine. If it were only that simple, it's not. But I try to be as minimalist as I can. My attitude is if you start with great grapes, you don't need to spend as much time manipulating it in the winery. And so it's much easier. We taste every day, we have natural ferments, and then we just basically baby it along until we feel that it's at the right time between finishing fermentation and tannins, and then we drain it, pop it into barrels, let it do its thing. At the moment, we're still going through conversion of malolactic. So everything's tucked up for about another 3 or 4 months before we actually start to look at bringing wines out and start blending and bottling.
Sure. It's not that far away, and I imagine it goes pretty quickly for you.
It does. I mean, before I used to think that being a winemaker would be a great life, that, you know, you'd have activity for about 2 or 3 months of the year. And then the rest of the time you'd be lying around, you know, sipping wine. But no, every day it's busy these days. If it's not in the vineyard, there's just so much new technology and information available. Even though we're organic here, we spend a lot of our time trying to understand ways to encourage the symbiotic nature between all of the flora and the fauna. So our vineyard manager is constantly dragging me out to look at new concepts. So never dull.
That's pretty cool, though, that idea of looking forward, how you can change something, how you can do something better, different, that hopefully will have a good payoff.
Much easier, too, than spraying. You know, everybody has different needs, and we're very lucky here that it's relatively dry. And so you can utilize nature more willingly. For us, if we see something in the vineyard, then an example, last year we had little tiny mites that were gnawing on the leaves, and so we bought in several bags of little ladybirds or ladybugs, and I think it cost us about $100, and we released nearly 1 million of them into the actual environment, and they munched their way through, and it was much easier than spraying. It was much nicer to be able to go out and release those and watch them flying than it was to be out there with a spray pack spraying something obnoxious into the environment.
It's almost like a little miracle, isn't it? Nature doing its gig.
It is. I mean, I was so lucky. We had a great vineyard manager, and I said, well, how do we stop them flying away as soon as we release them? And he said, sugar water. And I said, what do you mean? And he said, well, you add a little bit of sugar water into the bag and it wets down their wings, and then they can't fly off. So they actually hang out in your vineyard for a day or two, acclimatize, get to like your environment, sure, stay, and then they move on afterwards. So constantly learning.
Yeah,
all the little tricks.
Lots of tricks, exactly. Susan, as I was saying before, I was kind of leading up to the idea of, obviously, you're a woman winemaker, and there is a large and growing number of women making wine, which I kind of get to the point that it's certainly not an easy job. It's not easy for anybody.
No. It's lovely to see more women in the industry. When I first started out in Australia, there were less than 5%, and that was not all that many years ago, 25 years ago. Now, here in America too, we're probably closer to about 45-55% of women, both in the vineyard and in the actual wineries. So more young ladies are coming into the area that are not just born into it. It's not just, as we'd say, the next gen coming through. It's not easy. I can often think back to a funny story in Australia where a gentleman passed the comment. He said, oh, well, I guess as a woman winemaker, you just make white wines. And I said, why would you think that? And he said, well, big masculine red wines, only men make big masculine red wines. And I thought, that's interesting that there is that perception. And that was quite a few years ago, and that has changed. But it's interesting how people would assume that you would make one style or the other based on whether you're a lady or a gentleman.
It's crazy. There is this physical aspect of the job, other than being out in the vineyards, operating equipment. I mean, there's forklifts, there's all this kind of stuff involved. Equally up to the task, no question about it.
Oh, yes. And I think most people are. It doesn't really matter. It's more about the attitude that you have towards it.
Sure.
I can roll a barrel badly compared to my cellar hands, and they laugh at me as I'm rolling it down the barrel hole. But they know that I will get in and do exactly the same as they will. And that's the whole point, that you should have that great effort of everybody pulling their weight. And it doesn't matter whether you're pulling off your boots and jumping in the tank to actually dig out the tank or to actually taste. It's equally just as easy to do it. It's the mentality. And we have a lot of great techniques now to make it easier. I'm getting a little older, so the guys will actually have to help me in and out of the tank now. But I still get in. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's not an easy proposition for a lot of reasons. As you said, you talked about being claustrophobic, that kind of thing. But in the end, from what I've seen with wineries, a lot of it is jump. I don't mean the tank necessarily, but jump in when the job needs to be done, whatever it might be.
And that's true. In small wineries, there's not a lot of choice. And quite often we can be operating up to 24 hours a day. We try not to. 12 hours, you're tired. And after that, you really don't want to be around. You know, a few beers get you through it and a gin and tonic at the end of the day. But it helps that if everybody is part of that team, and we're a small winery, so it doesn't matter whether you're in the vineyard today, you can be back in the winery helping us out bottling or labeling tomorrow. And so even as a general manager, you know, there are times when you're short-handed, so to get the job done in the time you need it, everyone pulls their weight.
Yeah, that's what it is. It just gets done. What is your output at Spring Mountain?
So at Spring Mountain, we're a very small 100% estate-owned property, so all of the fruit that we grow comes directly from our own property. We have 800 acres, 200 planted out, and we produce somewhere between about 6,000 cases to 8,000 cases a year. It's predominantly Cabernet and all of the Bordeaux varieties. We do produce a little white, about 1,000 cases of Sauvignon Blanc, about 500 cases of Chardonnay, so just enough to really satisfy all of our happy customers that like something a little different. But no, we won't grow all that much larger. We don't have the room to expand. And now with all of the drought challenges that are occurring in Napa, we'd rather maintain a higher healthy amount of vines at the right size than plant out too many when we don't need to grow at this stage.
Well, in terms of drought, about what altitude are we here?
We range from about 400 feet where we're standing today down in front of the winery, and we go up to 1,600 feet at the very top of the portion of our property. But Spring Mountain actually goes up to 2,500 feet.
Right.
So you have everything from the beautiful sunshine down in the valley all the way through to what we'd call the fog line as you move higher up the mountainside.
The thing about a small winery is the ability to really focus for you, isn't it? To be able to really make that wine exactly what you want it to be.
Very much so. And for us, it's interesting that we have probably three very different types of, eight different types of soil, but three very specific types of climate as you move up the mountainside in terms of temperature. So that constantly changes the way that the fruit will actually grow and mature and how you pick it and when you pick it, but it also impacts the flavor. You know, down here, you see a lot of beautiful olive trees, but as we start moving up the mountainside, becomes a little bit more woodsy in character. So you see more of the bay leaf and some of the madrone trees imparting their characteristic. And so we talk about a woodsy characteristic. So it's different. It's the same with our Sauvignon Blanc. You get more of the bright, crisp acidity from the top of the mountain and more like a New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc where you get a little bit more of the green pea and asparagus. But down here, we actually get more of the tropical. So it's interesting to see the differences from such a very small time. You can drive 10 minutes and see something different.
Yeah, that's part of what AVAs are all about. Let's talk about the history. What I love about coming here, the caves are just absolutely stunning. They're very different kind of architecture on the inside, or structure, I should say.
Yes.
And then we have this wonderful building behind us, and hopefully we'll get some B-roll on that. Tell me a little bit about that history-wise.
So we actually have a beautiful old property that was originally developed in the late 1800s as a vineyard and winery. And the Chinese miners that were coming out of the mountainsides that could then no longer find work in the gold mines started to move down into the valley. And the original portion of our cave was actually developed and dug and built by a lot of the Chinese migrants that came through.
Wow.
And that's the small portion of the cave that you work through this morning. And so we store our Pinot Noir barrels there throughout the year. And then the rest of the cave was built in 1992. But the winery that you see today behind me was actually built in 1976. There was a traditional old white barn that looks very similar in photographs to the white barn that's over on my right-hand side. And that was obviously tumbling down and rebuilt by the previous previous owner in the late 70s.
I'm fooled by this building. It's a beautiful building, and obviously it looks like it's much older. So it's fooling us, pretty much.
Yeah, thank you. Just like me.
No, but it has so much character. The property here, right behind us, what vines are we looking at?
So we are actually looking at Merlot. We have meter by meter, so we have many different types of soil and aspect, and we've tried to match up the right type of growing conditions and the right clone and the right grape variety to the area. So Merlot's best at this site. We're trying to keep the competition so that it's not too... This soil is actually extremely fertile and they grow like weeds. So to keep the competition down, we planted them a little more closely together so that they actually feed off of each other and stop the competition of becoming wild, verdant vines.
Sure.
So they're in balance.
I'm sure that temptation for them is always there, right?
It is, but... We try and control that to the best of our ability.
So this is more of a personal question. What do you like to drink?
What do I like to drink? Well, during summertime, it's normally Sauvignon Blanc, my go-to every night. It varies. You know, during wintertime, which is supposedly winter now, so it's confusing for my body, but I love to sit down with a big red. We have Elevet, which is a Bordeaux blend, or our Cabernet. So if I'm having steak, then I'm probably going to go for our Cabernet. If I'm having lamb, then I'm probably going to pull out a bottle of that Elevet.
Are you a spirits drinker at all, too?
I am, actually. I grew up on gin and tonic many, many years ago. My father was a great Scotchman, so I'm into all the bourbons over here as well.
Yeah, I was kind of curious about that, your background with the name Doyle.
Yes, yeah.
So that's where your roots go?
Yes, Ireland. So, you know, good Irish whiskey.
Nice.
You know, being an Australian, we'll basically drink anything that's got alcohol, so.
Nice. We were talking before the interview, and we've already talked about a couple of experiences, but I mean, anything come to mind in terms of something crazy, funny, silly, wild, maybe back in your early days that you did that was like, wow, how did I survive that? Or how did they keep me on after doing that thing?
Not really. I think I've had a fairly tame life in comparison. Nothing that I could really probably say that I'm allowed to.
Okay.
That could be repeated. But no, I guess some of the best times for me were actually in the old days when you didn't get to be so politically correct and you'd strip down to the bikini and you'd dive in the tank and you'd actually dig out the tank in basically your underwear. And I can remember working for Domaine Chandon many years ago back in Australia, and they had this huge big viewing area that, of course, we didn't realize we were tired and not thinking. And I'd gone into the tank and they'd sent me in with a steaming machine and it was hot. So I'd stripped down to my underwear. And of course, I climb out of the tank in my underwear, rather thankfully matching briefs. And then I get this standing ovation from up on top of the corridor of all these ladies and gentlemen clapping as I'm coming out of the tank in my underwear. So I subsequently clambered back in very frantically and came out nicely attired.
It's almost like one of your worst dreams coming true.
Well, there were actually photographs that were sent back to me
that
people had taken, and they'd actually put them on the board of the winery of Susan clambering in and out of the tank.
Oh, okay, that's
half-naked.
A little bit too much, but hey, it's a fun memory, I imagine.
Oh, it is. So we had to take those down pretty quickly.
Yes, I bet.
And I learned to look after that before I would clamber out of the tank.
Was this all pre-internet days?
Yes, thankfully.
That's good. Yeah. Otherwise, they'd still be out there somewhere.
Otherwise, they'd still be out there.
Yeah. And who knows? Hopefully, they're not. But anyway, we'll move on from that. Spring Mountain, I've seen, is available for a small winery fairly widely. How great is your distribution?
Our distribution?
Yeah.
So we actually sell direct from our winery here as well. So you can drive up from San Francisco or Los Angeles and enjoy the beauty of the valley and take home a case of wine with you. Or we actually do distribute throughout California. We're in 10 of the top states, major cities. So you can find us in pretty much Chicago, New York, in Florida, Texas. It just does vary. We are in Boulder, Colorado. We're all over the place. If you can't find us, then go online and we can certainly help out and send that beautiful bottle of wine or the box of wine across to you.
And you have a wine club, as I recall?
We do have a wine club, and we do distribute a little bit into China and also into the United Kingdom. So we are going global.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Well, for our listeners, if they'd like to learn a little bit more about you and about Spring Mountain, how would they do that?
best to go online and look for Spring Mountain Vineyard, and that will give you our website and all the contact detail information, and it also gives some wonderful information about Spring Mountain Appellation as well.
And for our listeners who would like to come visit, is it by appointment, or are they able to stroll up here?
It is by appointment only. Don't let the gates fool you. We actually do welcome you. But yes, please do call ahead. There are certain licensing laws in the Napa Valley, and we are a smaller winery. So if you're on a bus, you can't just roll up and roll in. It is by appointment only, because we'd like to give you a wonderful personal experience. And it's much easier to do that on a one-on-one basis than it is if everybody just rolls in.
Your experience is what it's all about. When you go to a winery, you want to remember that experience. You want to savor it just like you would savor the wine.
Exactly. And we have several offers that you can enjoy being outside. You can go for a wander in the vineyard. We can take you through the caves, or we can take you up to the top of the mountain for a tour and show you the hillside and the beautiful view. So it just depends on the experience that you would like. So we'd like to tailor make that to each of the individuals that come and visit us.
And the property is stunning. Well worth coming to visit, both for the wine as well as for the scenery. Susan, thanks very much for taking the time and seeing us on a Sunday. That was very kind of you.
No, thank you. Enjoyed it.
Learn more by visiting springmountainvineyard.com.
Thanks for listening, and remember to like us on Facebook. Also, check out our YouTube channel.
Life Between the Vines is produced at Fifth Floor Recording Company in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Produced and edited by Ray Pfister. Theme song and original music written and recorded by Tim Dondarevo. Our host is Kay Paskoff. Web design by Jenny Holland. Our graphics and website specialist is Lawton Hall. Our web geek is Dan Gieschen. Photos by Jeanette Herniak. Copyright 2016.